Hello, everyone. Roger Marsh here for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. The news comes in all shapes, sizes, and formats these days, but how do you cut through all the noise and get to the heart of the matters that affect your family? Well, come to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk and sign up for Dr. Dobson's monthly newsletter. You'll find clarity on tough issues, encouragement for daily life, and trusted principles to help you build strong, healthy, and connected families. Go to drjamesdobson.org and sign up today. That's drjamesdobson.org.
Today on Family Talk.
I wasn't particularly sexually promiscuous. I didn't sleep around with a bunch of people and stuff like that. But emotionally, I was so promiscuous. It's like I just handed my heart over to boys, you know, and they didn't even have to promise me anything.
Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and the topic that we're going to be addressing today is, quite honestly, one that you just don't hear addressed in churches or in Christian circles very often, for that matter. But I've really been looking forward to it because I think it just might help save a marriage, possibly even your marriage. Our topic today is women and emotional adultery. Now, we know this is a provocative subject because God made us all sexual creatures, and yet we're only focusing on the particular problems of women in this area. Now, by no means, guys, are we letting you off the hook here. It's just that men and women are wired differently, and therefore, we have different vulnerabilities when it comes to adulteries and affairs. As I'm sure you know, our goal here at Family Talk in sharing this broadcast today is not to point fingers. It's simply to help someone, maybe one of our listeners, avoid the pitfalls that can absolutely tear a family apart. Now, our guest today on the program is Julie Barnhill. She's been on the Family Talk broadcast many times before, and every time she is on, we hear from so many of you who share how much you relate to her honesty and her humor and her warmth. Well, today, she brings that same style as she speaks very candidly but discreetly about her own struggles with emotional infidelity. Julie has written 11 books. She's spoken before tens of thousands in national and international audiences, even scored a guest appearance on Oprah at one point, and juggled marriage and motherhood in the middle of all of that. Now she hosts a retreat getaway for women who need to unplug and recharge just a bit, and we'll be sure to include a link to her website on our broadcast page so you can find out more about that. Just a quick note before we begin, this program features our former co-host, Lou Anne Crane, so you'll hear from her throughout the program. Now, let's jump in as Dr. Dobson welcomes Julie Barnhill to today's edition of Family Talk.
We welcome you back. I said I was going to read the titles of your books, and I'm going to do this real quick, but it really is revealing. She's Gonna Blow. I love that one. It's really about dealing with a mother's anger. And boy, that is useful and powerful stuff. And you can still get that book in
the
bookstores.
Available.
Yeah, I bet you wouldn't mind if they did, right? Scandalous Grace, Radical Forgiveness, and Exquisite Hope. And those are three different books. Motherhood, The Guilt That Keeps on Giving. We did a program didn't we? One Tough Mother. Mm. And then four books that also seem to be linked. Every Mother Can Keep Her Cool. I doubt that, but it's true.
Hey.
To some degree.
By the book.
Every Mother Needs a Good Laugh. I'm glad of that. Every Mother Can Beat the Blues. And Every Mother Can Let Go of Stress. And then other books that we've talked about here. And I imagine we'll have you back
to discuss them.
Yeah. Julie Barnhill has also been a guest on the Oprah Winfrey Show, CNN, NBC's The Other Half, and Janet Parshall. She's had articles printed in Woman's Day, and she's very active on Facebook. You're a very busy mother, aren't you?
I am. An unapologetic Facebook person. I just love the relations that come out of there. I told my husband, I said, I just have my own little counseling IM window, you know, and I'll go online and I have women from all over the world that'll be like, Julie, you know, you got a few minutes to talk. And the subject we're going to talk about today has been a few conversations that we've had on that.
Isn't it incredible the the methods now, the social networking that's possible through the
internet. And, you know, you can go to bad places with that, and you can go to redemptive places with that. And that's really what I'm trying to do.
Well, let's get into the topic that we're going to talk about today. Actually, this is your topic. It's not one we assigned. Women and emotional adultery. Mm-hmm. Specifically, what has led you down that path to think about this issue as it relates not only to yourself but other women? There must be a source of that interest. It really comes out of your life, doesn't it?
It really does. And, you know, I've thought about this since Luann and I talked about topics and I, you know, offered it. And it's not that I wanted to ever backtrack at all, but it really was like, okay, Julie, you know, it's one thing to talk about motherhood and anger and another to talk about, you know, guilt or something, but this is really putting yourself out there. But I just know there are women out there listening who are in really bad situations with men, maybe engaging with them one-on-one, you know, through conversation, but a lot of it sometimes is just that mental place that we go to in relationships and what we wish we had and what we wish we didn't have. And so, yeah, I'm very much sitting behind this microphone as a woman who has known what it is to swim in that water.
Well, you know, you told us before we went on the air that despite the fact that you've been on Oprah, you've done a lot of speaking, you're out there. You are more uneasy or nervous about the program today than any of the other things that we've done or that you typically do. This is not an easy one to talk about.
It's not because, you know, I love my husband. And I love my kids, but, you know, I know there's a vulnerability to this and also just a, like, wow, you really went there? You know, I just feel that, whether anybody else, you know, thinks that or not. But I'll tell you what makes it worth it is when I say it and when women come and speak to me and say, I'm so glad you said it. And even more when someone's like, I would have never thought someone like you, meaning what you talked behind a microphone, you know, but that we think that about one another. So we'll just do this, and we know that God is just going to redeem it all.
Well, this is an experience that dares not speak its name. Mm-hmm. People lie about this when they won't lie about anything, or they'll conceal it, even from a husband, even from those they're intimate with. So for you to be here, it says a lot. And we're going to be very discreet. We're not going to embarrass anybody here. Let's start with your high school years. I read that you brought baggage with you into adolescence.
I did. You know, my background, you know, trying to summarize it really quick, but, you know, I was adopted. I was 4.5 years old when I was officially adopted into a family, grew up in a wonderful home, knew I was loved. But I can remember, I can even go back as far as fourth grade and remember wanting boys' attention, not girls, boys' attention and friendship. And then I can even think of sixth grade. I blossomed early, you know, and I remember just thinking it was cool that a boy noticed I had a bra strap. Isn't that weird? Mm-hmm. And you'll be able to explain this to me, why I did this, Dr. Dobson. I appreciate
it's
that.
Happy hormones. Even before they came.
It was, but, you know, I look back and there was almost like, I use the word allurement. Like there was something in me that wanted to be able to allure boys. Or
you know what that allure is? It's affirmation. It is feeling affirmed and valued when the opposite sex says, you're interesting.
But is every girl at that age like that? Because it just when I look back, I'm just like, that was just – it seemed abnormally early and – I don't know. But I know that was part of it. And going into junior high, I can remember a skirt that my mom bought me that had a slit. Do you remember when you know, slitted skirts? Mm-hmm. And I was probably eighth grade or freshman, perhaps. But I remember being very aware of the shape of my legs.
And that boys were watching.
And that boys were watching. And I liked that and was disappointed if someone – I noticed if someone didn't look. And that was early on, and I didn't have any boyfriends or anything like that. But all of that was just kind of the soil.
Yeah. Luann, you remember when we did a program on the fair sex,
yes,
coming out of my book, Bringing Up Girls, and I quoted Stacey Eldridge,
mm-hmm,
writing about girls wanting the answer to one major question: am I lovely?
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody care? Does anybody want to see me? Does anybody see me? Am I valuable to anybody? And especially as a little girl, she wanted to be valuable to her father.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you were in foster care, you know, your father was a mystery.
Right.
And you had a father figure in the foster care dad, right? But
yeah, he became my grandpa, you know, which was
right?
interesting. But he was real quiet, you know, real quiet man. So he's not a real impact, you know, in my memory and stuff that I can remember. And I had a very loving father, you know, fished with my dad and hunted with my dad. And, you know, he taught me how to skeet shoot and all sorts of stuff. So there's a part of me that's, I think there's just a brokenness there, you know, whether it's just the spiritual dynamic of who we are as humans is part of it. And then, I don't know, sometimes I almost feel like I had a target that I was particularly...
Yeah.
You know, broken in that area.
Yeah. Well, then you came into puberty and adolescence, and those feelings continued.
Oh, very much
so.
Tell
the story.
Well, you know, I can remember my freshman year. There was a cute boy from Keytesville, Missouri, and we weren't supposed to like boys from Keytesville, but he was cute. And I can remember this. He was sitting playing basketball, and he was, you know, had a timeout or something, and he'd kind of look at me, that play you do, flirtatious, you lift your eyes and drop your eyes. And boy, I just was thrilled that he liked me. Mm-hmm. And that was like my first boyfriend. And it bothers me. I think about this now. It just bothers me, and this is how I've used it sometimes, that I wasn't particularly sexually promiscuous. I didn't sleep around with a bunch of people and stuff like that. But emotionally, I was so promiscuous. It's like I just handed my heart over to boys, you know, and they didn't even have to promise me anything. You know, I never had anyone's class ring. You know, no one offered their class ring to me. I never got to wear that on my finger or wrapped around my neck. It astounds me as a 44-year-old woman looking back at that young girl, and very much still wanted that attention and physically. And if you know, messing around physically was part of it, well, that, you know, yeah, that was part of it. And I had lots of guilt about it.
Mm. Yeah,
lots of guilt. But and would swear not to do things, and then would kind of find myself back in that rut of behavior.
Looking back on it, the seeds of emotional promiscuousness as an adult were planted at that time.
Absolutely planted at that time. You know, I can, not to jump ahead too much, but I can remember a specific counselor I went to in my 30s, and he had a sheet that he had you fill out before you came, and I was actually at the early stages of this emotional adultery, and I saw where I was going, and it bothered me, and yet I just felt like I could not go there, and I wrote everything down. And when I walked into the office, I sat down, and he took out my sheet and kind of reviewed it, and he went, "Where do you want to begin?" Mm. And he said during our counseling session, "Julie, given your past and given your history, it's amazing that you've remained sexually faithful in your marriage."
Hmm. Mm.
I wept. And it was affirming, and then also knowing where I was in my mind and my frustration in
my
marriage.
He was acknowledging that there was a need within you that had not been satisfied.
Right.
And yet it was very much there, even though you were happily married.
And I asked Jesus to come into my heart and be my Savior when I was a 9-year-old girl. And I've run hard after him. You know, like I said, I had a lot of guilt because I'd go to church. I wanted to do what's right, and I knew what was right and wrong. Went to a Christian college, thought I wanted to go into religious education, had a professor that's like, "No, all you'll do is teach Sunday school, and you're more than a Sunday school teacher." Had a man speak into my life, a professor. And I mean, that, so I've longed for holiness, and I married a man that I loved, and, you know, physicality there very much, that, you know, attraction with him. And then, yeah, just found myself at a place in my marriage where, but it actually, you know, it took root before then even. You know, Dr. Dobson, my thing was to go somewhere and to be like, okay, find the cute guy, you know, tall, dark, handsome. That's kind of my modus. And the game was to get his attention, to flirt, to do that thing, and to get him to like me. And then as soon as he liked me, game over. Yeah. You know, next.
I know that game well. Yeah.
And there's a healthy part of that, I guess, but I think I took it a little too far. And so to get married and stay, you know, with one person, wow, that's that. I really had a lot of faith.
Now, it takes two to tangle, and there are always two sides to every relationship problem. And you're not prepared to dump on your husband here and blame him for everything. But he has a component in it. He was not attentive to you at a particular time. Is that right?
You know, that's a little – it's partly right, but it's also – it'd be interesting if you could, like, observe, you know, our marriage or something like that. I'm a bulldozer, you know, and it's so interesting. You know, I've heard this, and, you know, you roll your eyes in marriage counseling and all that stuff. But the things that attracted you in dating and courtship and early marriage are the things that just drive you crazy. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that can just make you hard. You know, and just check out. And that was, that's Rick and I, you know?
In other words, he was a strong, silent type, and that was...
How'd you know?
You were drawn to him, and then afterward he wouldn't talk to you.
Yes, you know, he was fascinated by what I had to say.
How do I know?
And I loved that. And, you know, this is an aspect of the marriage that I think it'd be interesting to hear from you, too, is that I'd say about year 16 or 17 of our marriage, so we've been married 23, so it'd be earlier than that, 12 years. I said to Rick one time, I said, Rick, I'm not the same woman you married. I said, you know, I wanted to be in control when we got married. I mean, he was happy to let me make decisions and do stuff, and I took care of the bills. I did this, and I didn't want him doing it. And then there was just shifts over time. Yeah. And I want you to do that more. Well, you know, for 12 years it's been like this, and now, you know, I'm not happy. I'm not satisfied. Happy's not really the word. Yeah. It's just satisfied. And so I don't hear people dress that much in marriage books or marriage counseling that, you know, we do change. I mean, our character is the same. Our temperament remains largely the same. But that I didn't want to just talk about me anymore, believe it or not. let's talk about you, Rick, you know, and what do you want to do and what are your interests? And that was a shift for him. You know, he didn't really know what to do with
that.
Let
me get myself into real trouble.
Okay. Please do.
Yeah. Here's a phrase that is often true. A woman wants a man she can look up to who won't look down on her.
Hmm.
And so if a man is strong, the relationship is often strong. And if a man defers to her to a degree, there can be a contempt or a something missing in that relationship.
I think contempt's a good word.
Yeah,
that's actually a word that the Holy Spirit really brought out in my life. Probably about 6 years ago when I was really asking some questions about my heart towards my husband and marriage in general. And that was kind of what I got was just, Julie, you just have a contempt for him. You know, when he does step up and when he does do that, you know, then I'm, well, you didn't do it right. You know, or you didn't do it the way I think you should
do it.
And
yet it's what you wanted.
Yeah. And I don't want to
grab
And
for.
I don't want to sound stereotypical, you know, I mean, in that. But I do. And I think it does, as a Christian, it does go back to the garden. You know, I think it is part of that curse where God says to the woman, your desire will be for him, and you're not going to like it. You know, it's can you?
Well, you know? I can. In fact, Dr. Dobson, I was going to ask you about that scripture in Genesis and your take on that, because we have this tension that Julie's describing where we want our husbands to lead, but then get out of the way because I want to. And I'm thinking it goes back to the garden.
It's there. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to me that in those very early scriptures that the Lord gave for us, he was outlining the nature between men and women. Mm-hmm. And that is so offensive to women and to men, too, sometimes, because it's politically incorrect, but it is still true. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that male and female sexuality is very, very different, and affairs that occur take a different character. Mm-hmm. For men, they are largely physical in nature. It's King David looking out the window and seeing Bathsheba. There's no indication that he knew her, that he had a relationship with her, that he had an emotional connection with her. He saw her and desired her and wanted her and took her. and killed her husband in order to get her. Affairs and adultery for a man don't often go to murder, but sometimes they do. But that is rather typical of a man's sexuality. If you think of Matthew 5, where Jesus is talking, and he said, "He that looketh on the body of a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her in his heart already." He didn't even have to do it. Mm-hmm. He didn't even have to carry through with it. The adultery comes from the willingness of the heart to defy God. That's how I define lust. For a woman, it is much more emotional in nature. And Jesus didn't say, "She that looketh on the body of a man to lust hath committed adultery." It's all masculine. Mm. That whole thing is written from a masculine point of view. If he'd have talked about women, he would have talked about your subject today. Mm-hmm. He would talking about really sinking into this fantasy life, this need for emotional connection, this desire for love, this desire for affirmation that leads you to do wrong things. Mm-hmm. You put those two together and you've got adultery is what you have. And you stop short of it, but that's what you're talking about.
No,
you're talking
about
that form of feminine lust, if you will.
And that's the word that I wanted to use. You know, I wanted to use adultery. It's almost like when I spoke about my anger with my children, I used the word abuse. I said, "I've abused my kids. You know, I've improper, excessive treatment with them physically." Yeah. And I got a lot of flack from that for some people. And with this subject, it's like, this isn't an affair. Mm-hmm. This was adultery. This is me giving to someone, you know, emotions and thoughts and dreams
that belong to your husband.
That belong to my husband. And before that happened, I had it in my heart, in my mind, with a person unnamed. I mean, literally, you know, there was no man per se, but I was in that land. And that's something I'll talk to women about. I'll be like, one of the most difficult things for me in my life, and perhaps it has to do with adoption and different things like that, but is to live present. To be present. I mean, in my life, I've had a hard time maybe my life would be this way if that happened.
Well, Julie, you've been very open and vulnerable with us today, and we appreciate that. But we are running out of time, and there's just so much more to your story that I like to share with our listeners. Would you stay and be with us again tomorrow?
Well, I'm not leaving. I'm just going to stay
right here. That sounds good.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Julie.
Well, blessings to you.
As you heard, we're going to pick it up right here tomorrow with Julie Barnhill here on Family Talk. She will share more about her struggle with emotional infidelity and also offer some tips for helping women guard against this potential pitfall in their marriages. In the meantime, if you would like to learn more about Julie, her books, or her ministry, or if you want to hear this program again, go to drjamesdobson.org or give us a call at 1-877-732-6825. Again, the number 877-732-6825. In addition, a lot of the themes we've touched on here are also represented in Dr. Dobson's book, Love Must Be Tough. Now, the main topic of that book is a little bit different from what we talked about today, but it does offer useful advice for anyone who has discovered that their spouse is having an affair or if they see themselves drifting into one, especially an emotional affair. One of the chapters, for example, is titled The Anatomy of Adultery, and it outlines the steps most women take on the road to an affair. That information could be a powerful tool for avoiding years and years of pain. And you can get a copy at drjamesdobson.org or just give us a call at 1-877-732-6825. We offer these resources because we really hope that they will help save a marriage. And if you're able, would you please help us in this mission to save marriages? Your donation of any amount would help us strengthen families all over the world. So remember, you can donate online at drjamesdobson.org or call us. The number again is 877-732-6825. And we thank you for every gift and every prayer that comes our way. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to tune in again tomorrow for the rest of the conversation with Julie Barnhill.
I had checked out emotionally in my marriage. I was tired of having conversations with my husband. I was tired of not getting the response that I wanted. You know, was it what I should hear? I don't know, but it's sure what I wanted to hear and wanted to talk about. So I just shut myself off emotionally from him.
That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
This is Dr. Tim Clinton, Executive Director of the James Dobson Family Institute. Thanks for listening today. We hope you found this program helpful and encouraging. Please remember that our ministry is here to serve you and your family. For more information about our programs and resources, or to learn how you can support us, go to drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. Or call us toll-free, 877-732-6825. I pray that God will bless you in 2020. And as we start the new year, we're so grateful for your partnership. We ask you to stand with us and to continue to defend the Christian values in an ever-changing culture. Thanks again for joining us. We hope you'll join us again on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.